The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
This is Money Beat from the Wall Street Journal. Now from our studios in New York, here are Paul Vigna and Steven Grosser.
Hello. It's a big week on the earnings calendar, a big week on the economics calendar, and a big week down in our nation's capital. This is Steven Grosser. I'm joined in the studio with Eric Holm and Kate Davidson, economics reporter, is down in D.C. Hi, Kate. How are you doing?
Hi, great. How are you?
Good. So you're going to have a busy week this week, aren't you?
Feels like it's been like that for almost a year, but this is a really big one.
I would like to talk about sort of the political realm first.
Sure.
We're expecting President Trump to decide who's going to be the next chair of the Fed, right? This
week? That's right. We had heard a couple weeks ago that it was probably going to be during this week. He leaves for a trip for Asia on Friday. So, you know, there was always a chance. I think we've been on high alert waiting. Maybe he could tweet it sooner. But now it's looking like the window is closing and we'll get some official word this week.
And what's sort of the game, I guess a parlor game going on and who it could be? Do we have any insights at all about that?
Yeah, so much speculation. Yeah. So we know we had reported that the field kind of went down to five candidates. And then over, I guess, the past week or so, it became clear, and the president had said in a couple interviews that it was really more down to like two, maybe three people. And those candidates appear to be current Fed Governor Jerome Powell, Stanford professor John Taylor, who's very well known in monetary policy circles, and of course, Janet Yellen, the current Fed chairwoman. You know, if the president did the sort of typical traditional historical thing, it would be to offer her, Janet Yellen, another term. That's what a lot of presidents do in their first term, and especially considering the economy is doing well, and of course the stock market, the president likes to point that out. It seems like that would make the most sense, although the president kind of offered a little hint when he was talking to Lou Dobbs last week and basically said, you know, you like to make your own mark. And I think some people took that as a suggestion that he wants to make his own mark on the Fed, that is, put in his own person, which is something that we'd sort of been hearing was part of, might have been part of his thinking. So it wasn't terribly surprising, but that was a little hint that he offered. So then you see Powell and Taylor. You know, we've been told repeatedly, and our White House reporters know this the best, given their experience, that the president has, you know, this decision isn't final until it's final, until he says. But, you know, we have one good source, and my colleagues, Mike Bender, has heard from one good source that Jay Powell is, in fact, going through the final stages of the White House vetting process and that it looks like the president is leaning toward him. So that's what we know so far. But again, it's not final. It could be Taylor, and hey, it could be Yellen. And, you know, this president is certainly known for making kind of spur-of-the-moment personnel decisions. So I really think we have to wait and see.
We also have a Fed meeting coming up this week, which could be awkward.
Yeah, that was something we were all kind of eyeing when we had heard that the decision would be over in the next few weeks and that it was going to come before this Asia trip. And we thought, you know, Fed officials have this thing called a blackout period, which probably to White House officials didn't really mean anything, didn't matter all that much, but they typically don't come out and give speeches or say anything. So we all sort of wondered, oh, is that weird? Like, does that interfere with the timing of any sort of announcement, depending on who it is? I don't have any like strong feeling to think that it does, but it certainly puts these two big events in the same week. Obviously, the announcement of the next Fed chairman is bigger than this meeting, especially since we don't expect anything to actually happen at this meeting, although we could be, you know, looking for some sort of signal about what the Fed will do at its December meeting. But certainly it's another big moment. I really hope they don't announce this at 2 p.m. on Wednesday.
That's a good point. Also, we're expecting news on taxes, right?
Exactly. So also on Wednesday. Wednesday is the big day of the week, I guess. Also on Wednesday, we are supposed to get a tax bill. This whole big tax reform effort we've been hearing about for months and months and months, we will finally see what Republicans on Capitol Hill intend to do. And of course, that's going to be a long process with more negotiations and what they call markups, and there will be amendments offered. But this is sort of the first version that will give us a lot of detail that we have not had up until this point. So on things like state and local tax deductions, on 401k contributions, whether there'll be limits on those, you know, how taxes on foreign companies will be limited and structured. So all of that good stuff, we'll get our first look at that on Wednesday.
Those two things you said there are two things that are of critical importance, I think, to the market. I mean, there's been a lot of speculation, and generally the thought is that tax reform, changes to the tax code would be good for companies and therefore for investors, but there could be lots of room for disappointment, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the old cliche, like the devil is in the details, and it's the easy parts are the parts that I think we've heard policymakers talking about, is the cuts and the benefits that families are going to get and how this is going to be good for business. But if they're going to truly reform and overhaul the tax code, there are hard choices that have to be made, and that is, you know, how are they going to pay for it? And of course, they've passed this budget that allows for what's called a reconciliation process. That is a certain amount of money that they could add to the deficit over the next decade. You know, the size of the tax cuts could be within those parameters. But there's still, you know, if they're trying to be really ambitious with the tax cut, they'll still need to offset some of those costs somewhere else. And so that's the tricky part that we don't exactly know. You know, what it's going to look like, and it's going to disappoint somebody. I think it's fairly safe to say. So, right, we will find out who is disappointed and how much on Wednesday.
I just realized we were well into this podcast, and we haven't talked about a jobs report.
I know.
That's how busy this week is.
The question I have is there anything that could be in this jobs report that would prevent the Fed from raising rates in December? I don't think so.
We're still expecting to see. I guess we're looking to see if there's going to be a big bounce back because of the hurricane related effects that we saw in the last jobs report. So, yeah.
Which was we lost 33,000 jobs or 33 less jobs, 33,000. Sorry, less jobs.
Right.
Sorry about that. Go on.
Right. No. Well, that's right. I mean, it seems fairly safe to assume, and I think Fed officials are expecting to see a big bounce back. But right, it's just it's all about the hurricane, and does that wash out, and what does that look like?
What has been interesting in the data, the economic data coming out recently, though, is the hurricane seems to, you know, the hurricanes seem to have less of an impact than than many had expected.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I say it's still a little bit unclear. You know, Fed officials, it was interesting covering the minutes from the September meeting. I mean, they mentioned the hurricanes a lot in terms of what they expected. You know, they thought it would weigh on third quarter growth. And maybe, you know, we didn't see that. Maybe we thought the numbers would look worse than they ended up looking. That might change. Of course, those numbers are revised a lot. It's a little bit hard to tell. I think officials are expecting that overall between third and fourth quarter, it would kind of be a wash. But it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to know month to month exactly what that's going to look like.
And we also have a big key piece of data that kicks off the week. In fact, it's the Fed's preferred inflation data, the PCE, comes out.
Inflation has been kind of the whole story for the Fed for much of the year as they think about how many times they want to raise rates this year. And they signaled they were still open. Officials have said they're still sort of open to the possibility of raising rates again in December. It seems to depend very much on what the inflation data tell them, and are they actually making progress toward that elusive 2% target? So, you know, if we look at the CPI data from earlier this month, it suggested that, you know, that it went up over the month, which I think probably isn't totally surprising because, again, the hurricanes affected some oil.
Gas.
Exactly.
And,
the gasoline prices are higher, so that's not surprising. But it's been fairly steady, I think, since May, you know, the year-over-year numbers and core CPI, certainly. So I'm not sure what we'll see, but I don't think the numbers will be enough, of course, to sway the Fed's decision at the meeting at the meeting this week. But
and the previous meeting too, the Fed sort of seemed to hint at the idea that we don't really know what's going on with inflation, but that's not going to necessarily stop us from raising rates. I mean, they might not have said that as specifically, but that seemed to be the takeaway by the market.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I mean, you've heard some Fed officials, you know, like Rob Kaplan, certainly some of them have raised concerns about what the numbers are telling them. But right, it's still a little bit unclear what exactly they will want to see. I think we'll have to be listening for the Fed speakers after the meeting to come out and sort of give their take on what the latest inflation numbers tell them.
And there was a divide at the meeting, too, about people who are very concerned about inflation and people that weren't that concerned about inflation, right?
Exactly. And that's what I mean. Right. It would seem like overall they're still tending to move in this general direction, although individual members have raised concerns. So, yeah, there's a split, and it's been kind of something that's been festering, I think, as they continue to try to get their arms around what exactly is happening, which, again, as you said, is further maybe further obscured by the hurricanes in the fall.
Thank you very much, Kate. It's been greatly appreciated.
Kate, let us know if you need help down there.
I'll give you guys a call. thank you.
We've been talking about the economic calendar, and you're listening to MoneyBeat from the Wall Street Journal.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
For a new podcast experience, subscribe to the Future of Everything podcast from the Wall Street Journal. Now on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.
This is Money Beat from the Wall Street Journal. Now from our studios in New York, here are Paul Vigna and Stephen Grosser.
Hello and welcome back to the Money Beat podcast. This is Stephen Grosser. Earnings season is well underway. 55% of the companies in the S&P have reported so far, and profits have grown 4.7%. This week, we'll see a couple of big tech names, Apple, Facebook, and joining us for the second segment is Dan Gallagher, who's our expert on Apple and Facebook. Dan, I'll just jump right into it. What can we expect from these two tech behemoths?
Well, you'll see that Google's report showed that was a good sign for Facebook. It showed people are still – advertisers are still using these channels heavily to advertise, even with all the concerns that have come up about the, you know, post-election issues and everything. So I think you'll see strong ad growth at Facebook. What's uncertain to me is what we're going to see on the, in terms of the usage growth, because usage is really what drives usage obviously drives the advertiser interest, which drives revenues. So are we going to see usage come off because people are concerned about, you know, the things that we've seen reported over the last couple months about Russia meddling and everything? So that to me is the big unknown. I haven't seen any data that suggests it's falling significantly. Uh-huh. But if it came in like lower than they've been growing in the past, you know, that could be a cause for concern. And I think that's just kind of still the big unknown right now.
What about Apple and the iPhone? The next super cycle is supposed to be beginning right, you know, now.
In fact,
Much of a clarity are we going to get on that?
That is a good question, because they're going to report earnings Thursday. Friday morning is when the iPhone 10 goes on sale, or as we all call it, the iPhone X, that everybody sees it. What we're seeing already is that supply on that phone is really low. So people who are going in for pre-orders seeing their deliveries pushed out past into December and so forth. So Apple will give a forecast for the December quarter, and that will be a key, you know, thing investors want to watch, because that's going to be the kind of beginning of the of this called super cycle. But because this phone is so supply constrained, my bet is the forecast isn't going to be as big of a jump as they typically see in a December quarter. The question is, how will investors take that? I think a lot are primed to take it as not a concern, because they figure these sales are going to happen even if people have to wait a couple months to buy this phone. You know, people who are less positive on Apple think maybe the super cycle won't be as super.
Dan, both these stocks were up Friday pretty significantly alongside some of the other huge tech names. I'm wondering if that's setting up for some sort of disappointment if they don't clear some very high hurdle.
It's possible. And Apple stock has already come up a lot going into the cycle. But I got a feeling that most people on Apple are seem confident that the cycle is going to be spread out more than usual because this phone is so supply constrained. So I got a feeling they'll be able to get away with a lower forecast for December than they have typically. Facebook, like I said, they got a read through from Google, which was positive for them. Apple didn't really have a read through from all the big earnings that we just saw, because Apple's in the business of selling devices at these, you know, ridiculously high margins, and that's not what Amazon does or Google or Microsoft. So I think what you're seeing with Apple is more of a, would it be a sympathy gain or something? So yeah, I think it'll depend, but I got a feeling Apple is going to probably, you know, not fall super hard unless the forecast is really disappointing.
Facebook has been generating a lot of headlines, got a lot of attention down in Washington. Are we expecting comments about that? And are investors really concerned about how this is going to impact their business model?
I think there's concern, but it's been hard to value that concern. Like, what do you think is going to happen? You know, people talk about one law that's been proposed is how political ads should be labeled as from what source they're from. But really unclear how that would affect, you know, political advertising spending on Facebook, you know, because they already do that in TV and radio. It doesn't really seem to hurt that. You know, it's more of a risk of, you know, could there be more problems down the road because, you know, these companies aren't engendering a lot of sympathy right now on either side of the political aisle.
Right.
I think investors are kind of not really sure how to value that risk because it's sort of vague. It could happen, but it's hard to put a concrete number on it.
Okay.
I think it's there. It's an impact. I don't know what Facebook's going to say about it. Sheryl Sandberg is always on the conference call. She was in Washington trying to work it over. I'm sure they'll try to paint the rosiest picture they can and the things they're trying to do to help make things more reliable and transparent. I got a feeling if the usage numbers and ad growth numbers are good, I think investors will let the other stuff slide for now.
And I'd like to bring a Charlie Grant, heard on the streets, Charlie Grant in now, because I saw Tesla on the earnings calendar for this week, and I was like, Charlie, I bet would have some comments about that. So what can we expect from Tesla? They report on Wednesday, right?
Yes, Wednesday after the bell. Thanks for having me. And the answer is expect the unexpected with Tesla. Elon Musk has a way of pulling a rabbit out of his hat, whether launching brand new business line, pulling forward long-term projections and essentially doubling them, you know, on a whim. So you never know what comes on Tesla earnings. There are some things you can count on, but you're just not sure whether they're going to matter.
What are the things I guess investors should be paying attention to?
I think they should
instead of the smoke and mirrors.
Well, see, they do pay attention to the smoke and mirrors. Here's what I think they should pay attention to. How many cars has Tesla built since the Model 3 was launched over the summer? And the production rollout's been extremely slow. Tesla built 260 cars in the third quarter.
And we can refer readers back to the nice scoop that our colleagues put together.
Yes, yes.
In terms of how they were putting together parts of the car.
Key parts by hand.
Yes, them by hand.
And I mean, call me a cynic, that doesn't scream mass production capability to me just yet. So that was about a month ago. So we'll be hopefully getting an interim look on whether things have picked up at Fremont, Tesla's main car factory, since then. The other thing that you got to pay attention to is the cash burn. For now, you know, Tesla has access to the capital markets and can seemingly raise money whenever they want. But the money goes fast. They issued $1.5 billion worth of debt in August, and in the last quarter, which ended in June, they burned $1.1 billion in 3 months. So there was not a viable standalone business, and because of that, it means that capital markets access is essential to the stock. It can't survive without it. But
people are willing to give the money.
Absolutely. So the question as an investor going into this that you have to ask yourself is the story still plausible? Is the dream alive? Because if it is, then they're going to have no problem raising the money and the stock is probably going to go back up again. But, you know, they're living month to month and it's a very delicate situation, which is why each of these earnings reports are actually quite exciting.
Do you think anything in the earnings could actually, you know, kind of spook investors or make them wake up to all the things you've been writing?
No. In all seriousness, the longer the production rollout takes of this car, the more the issue of competition from, you know, traditional automakers becomes relevant. Because the whole idea with Tesla is they're way farther ahead of the competition on these cutting-edge electric cars, which are the future. And if that changes, then you have a company that just does not have the same capital ability that GM or Ford has or manufacturing experience, and they're not ahead. So the situation could change quickly. But, you know, so until further notice, the dream is alive and well in investors' eyes.
All right. Thank you very much, Charlie. Also on the calendar on Tuesday, Aetna, Pfizer, MasterCard, and Under Armour. Wednesday, besides Facebook and Tesla, which we just talked about, are a bunch of the biggest insurers, Prudential, Allstate, MetLife. And on Thursday is a busy day with Apple and Alibaba, Dow DuPont, Yum Brands, Ralph Lauren, and Starbucks. So pay attention and thanks for joining us. We'll see you later.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/washingtonwise.